what anything can reasonably do at a premium cost.
I don't know. I think they're, you know, I think they're going to try and get away with something a little more premium.
What, I mean, does that have a date?
I think they said it was to this year, the Mario game, but I don't know when.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know, $4.99.
I just find that stuff very interesting.
Like where you come in at.
Yeah, because that's not an easy thing to do. People are going to buy it regardless, yeah. But how many people?
I don't know. You only get a couple of first shots at this. You only get one first shot.
Totally.
There's also like all sorts of weird stuff going on. There was a lawsuit or people coming out against Pokemon Go.
Yep.
There was also something we'll just briefly mention in case it comes back up later. The No Man's Sky stuff in the UK. I believe it's UK.
Yeah, it was UK.
Where their Honesty in Advertising, I forget what their acronym is for their agency.
It's some equivalent of like the Better Business Bureau, but for advertising.
But it's like the word ministry.
Yeah.
The Ministry of Advertising is looking into claims of false advertising.
Right. And I think citing some of the stuff we've talked about on this podcast, like those trailers and what have you. So
one more piece of Ubisoft news. Bigger than news this
They're
week.
All over the place.
And this one is, I don't know, and I told Alex before, I think he made a big sigh face of Michel Ancel posted a piece of artwork, which is basically Beyond Good and Evil 2 artwork.
Right.
And then the official Ubisoft Twitter account in France said, you should really follow Michel Ancel
he's not
on Instagram.
Cool to say.
So he posts this kind of artwork. What is it? Concept artwork.
Concept, right. Yeah.
It's a painting, basically, which, you know, sure.
I see a pig dude.
Give me a pig man.
I see a pig dude, but what is the most disturbing part of this painting? I'm looking at
the
ponytail,
the top knot?
Nope. I can't unsee it. It is troubling beyond anything I can
describe. The eyeball flying above his head?
Nope, I'm even okay with that.
The fact that he's only wearing one glove.
Nope, it is the uber realistic and endlessly creepy human baby hand.
On the
that
pig.
The pig has. That is a very true-to-life baby
worse.
Hand,
that
and
pig's
it is
got
upsetting worse. To me in ways I am not sure.
Is it because his other hand looks like just like a...
Blur.
A blade, just a poof.
And then he's got that one perfect baby hand.
What are the chances that this is all an elaborate ruse just to get Michel Ancel more Instagram followers?
I don't know.
To what end?
So he'll have more Instagram followers.
That's the end.
That's like, he just like, hey, I need a favor from you guys.
Yeah,
can you do me a solid? Can you just
follow me on Instagram.
I take these really great photos, and not enough people are looking at
them. No filters.
And, you know.
But Ubisoft, like, their French Ubisoft office supported it.
Yeah. And I'm saying, he probably knew someone at the French office and was like, look, I just need some help.
Yeah, well, he's like, so he's off on his own working on Wild?
Wild.
But he is, like, affiliated?
Yeah, so he still works with Ubisoft, whatever. But he is not, I think, he is not a full-time employee at Ubisoft anymore.
Okay, because the team that's making Wild is not a Ubisoft.
No, it's his team.
Right, but it's not an affiliated with Ubisoft
no,
team.
But I think isn't... Aren't they publishing Wild?
I don't know.
I think what might have happened was that he split off at some point, formed this team, but, like, maintained his business relationship
gotcha.
With the company.
Michel Ancel, meanwhile, is working on Wild, a game he's creating with a non-Ubisoft-affiliated indie studio in 2014. Ancel said that he was staying at Ubi while working with the indie team and would continue work on Beyond Good and Evil 2. Yves Guillemot commented at E3 2016, saying that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is still coming. Guys,
okay.
it's a cruel joke at this point.
Somewhere inside No Man's Sky is Beyond Good and Evil 2. You just have to find the right
planet. You just gotta land on the right planet.
Just gotta find the right planet.
And then, did you guys talk about South Park getting delayed?
No.
We did.
Did we say
that
last week?
Yeah, we talked about that.
Or the week before?
Next year.
Oh, right. Because it was, that's the one that you were like, well, that's the one that'll hit. And then it was like...
I was dead wrong.
Dead wrong.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, look.
It's fine.
At some point, someone managed to will Shenmue 3 into existence. So, you know, anything's fucking possible. Looking forward to the Beyond Good and Evil 2 Kickstarter coming at E3 next year. And we'll have more to report on then.
Do you guys remember when Beyond Good and Evil 2 was announced?
No.
It was, like, within a couple of years of the first game coming out, wasn't it?
2008.
Yeah, all right. It's 5 years.
Man, games are hard.
Games are tough to make.
They're tough.
Okay, that
first game's fine. It's good.
I like it.
It's good.
I think I played it on GameCube.
I played it on Xbox, I think.
Okay. I remember that
GameCube,
that had a little disc in it. A little baby disc.
Just like that little baby hand. It's freaking me out.
Alex,
yes.
You played a video game that is in reality, a real game.
Yes.
A genuine game. Tell me about Forza.
Yeah, so Forza Horizon 3 is out.
What do you think? I need to know. I want to know if I should play it.
I really like it.
You have these, like, very honeymoonish adventures with these games, though. I know you. Last time, you went on about Horizon 2, and you were like, I'm playing the shit out of this game real quick. I'm buying all the cars. I don't know. I'm spending money like a wild man.
I like this a lot better than 2.
All right.
So I liked Horizon 1 because it was weird. It was the first time they were trying to kind of branch out from what proper Forza tends to be, mm-hmm. Which are these extremely detailed, extremely well-mannered, but
very
frankly,
simmy.
Very dry driving games.
Yeah.
And the Colorado setting was not the greatest in the world, but it had enough diversity to where it was like, this is fun, this is neat, I like this, I can drive like an asshole, there's cool shit here.
Yeah.
The second one in Europe, like, I didn't like the environments as much, like, it was pretty.
Was 2 Amalfi Coast?
It was an amalgamation of multiple coastal areas in Europe.
I've never played the Horizon games.
They're the ones I would recommend to you if you were going to play any of those games.
I like the Forza games.
I think you would like this better.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. This one is the one that at E3 they showed, like, the airdrops, right?
Yes.
I was like, your friend comes in a cargo container.
That's not how it works.
It takes place in Australia.
That doesn't happen.
They have rendered a variety of different environments, cities, jungle area, beach, straight up outback areas. Apart from looking real pretty, I'm playing on Xbox One, by the way, I'm not playing the PC version. Just they have nailed the act of asshole driving.
What does that mean?
It is.
I have to press you on this.
It's better than Burnout.
So the beauty of
what is asshole driving?
I mean, it's not quite better than Burnout. No, nothing's better than Burnout when it comes to pure asshole driving.
Of course not.
Yeah, Burnout Paradise is still the benchmark by which all driving games are judged.
Right, sure.
This is the closest they've gotten. Like, the Horizon games definitely feel like they worship at the altar of Paradise without just doing the same thing.
Gotcha.
Yes, there's on-track driving, on-road driving, mm-hmm. But there's a wide variety of vehicle types, dirt buggies, there's a weird little three-wheeled milk truck-looking thing that you drive around. It's like an old, UK, much maligned design. I can't remember what it's called. Muscle cars, whatever you want. And the off-roading is not only allowed, but encouraged. The environments are specifically built to kick up as much debris and shit around you as you are just crashing through fields and, palm trees and whatever else. Just causing the chaos you want to cause.
It kind of looked like, just from the trailers, I really haven't seen much else, but a little Motorstorm-ish.
Because there's a whole festival wrapper thing that they put around it that is definitely, like, similar to what Motorstorm was earnestly going for, but never really quite nailed. And this stuff doesn't, it's still cheesy as shit. The characters are not really that interesting or pleasant to talk to, but... Boy,
is there like a campaign?
Yes.
You're not talking to cars.
No, there are people. Like, the whole point
what is
that you're
on?
Running
I talk to my car all the time.
Of driving and music and whatever else.
And I'm out of the car?
No, you're never out of the car.
No, then who am I talking to?
There's just characters who talk to you over a radio or whatever.
Oh, okay.
The old radio.
Hey, get back here, man. 311's about to take the stage. We gotta go.
This Big Mama calling in right here.
You're not that far off.
Okay.
Anyway, that stuff's dumb. It always has been. But it's earnestly dumb. Like, I appreciate it for its stupidity.
We gotta get this vape juice back to the festival in a hurry. Come on, Bill, let's go. Punch it. You gonna make a right turn here?
Don't heat up too much. You'll vape all the vape juice.
Oh, shit. My cherry berry's on fire.
Accents aside, you're not that far off.
Oh, it's in Australia. Sorry.
Some of them are Australian. There's an Irish woman you talk to. I don't know. Anyway, the point is that the driving in those games is incredibly satisfying. Great variety of vehicles. They've added some online mode stuff, which I don't really give a fuck about. Like, as a single player driving experience, those games are very, very fun. And this is, I think, is the best one of
my
them.
My biggest hang up I remember that I played with Horizon 2 was that there was too much time in between I was doing cool shit.
Yeah, there's not a lot of downtime in this game.
Good.
Like, it's, if you're not doing a race, you can go to the barn finds, you can go hunt for other drivatars that you want to add to your crew.
I'm in.
All that stuff. Like, there's lots of shit on the map to be doing at all times.
Okay.
And maybe it's even a little overloaded. Like, I looked at the number of championships I have to complete to get to the final thing, and it's like, boy, that seems a long way off, even after playing it for, like, 12 hours at this point.
Oh, wow.
And I'm sure this is a question Google can answer for me very quickly, but I wonder if our PC racing wheel works right into those UVP, is that what they're called?
I don't know. As I said, I'm playing Xbox One, so I'm not sure about that. I've heard some stuff.
You get the Windows one. free, right?
I think so. So the thing I'll say is that I've heard some stuff about the PC version, certain things not running super well, some issues with, like, soundtrack stuff not working correctly. I don't know. I will say that the Xbox version includes OneDrive support for Groove Music.
Okay.
Do you know what Groove Music is?
I mean, I do, but I don't use it.
So it's an app on the Xbox. I don't know if it exists beyond that, if it's a Microsoft thing.
It's in Windows 10.
It's okay. So if you have a subscription to that, you can create playlists on there, and you can add that stuff
Spotify
to your game. Right? Yeah, and but it's, like, direct in the game. Like, you can just access the playlist without having to load up the app.
Okay.
I know, that's not a big... I like doing that stuff.
Wait, do you have a subscription?
No, I just took the 14-day free trial. Of course I'm not going to pay for that. But for the 14 days that I have it,
yeah,
I'm making some playlists.
Great. Can I tune in to, like, free radio on the internet?
Free radio? Yeah,
sadly, I'm afraid not. That's coming in Forza 4, I'm sure.
Truck Simulator, yeah. Forza 4 Truck.
What are you doing? You dumbass.
Top of the show.
Oh,
because he's...
Learn to merge!
He's doing a radio show. That's cool. I should check out Forza Horizon 3.
Yeah.
The third.
It's good. I look, there aren't a lot of great driving games out there right now. There are some, not a great number. I think the Horizon games are probably the best series going right now.
You know what knocked me off of some of them?
Was that
Microsoft always had an issue with racing wheel compatibility.
Sure.
Where you buy a racing wheel, it is either compatible with the Xbox brand of consoles, or you could buy one that's compatible with PS4 or PC.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was hard to find one that you had to have, like, selector switches and stuff that was compatible with all three. Very expensive. So now that you can play those Xbox One games on your PC, that will open up, I think, Forza for me again.
Yeah.
For racing with stuff. Because I tend to lean towards the PC, PS4 racing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sea of Six.
Yeah. So we got a preview build of that game, which I think we'll do a video for here shortly. Hopefully it'll be up in the next few days. But it is the full game, but not the full game. It's you can play an entire game of Civ in this build on one difficulty level. It's 10 of the 20 included Civs, and you can complete it, which, you know, the previous stuff that I had played was like, 100 turn limit or 150 turn limit. So this, I actually got to see what the end game in that game looks like, and the mid game for that matter. So I did. I beat one entire game of Civilization VI on what it is.
And what is it?
It's Civilization.
No, come on.
The sixth.
Okay.
So we talked a little bit about some of the changes in this one before. The unstacking of the cities, putting wonders and districts and stuff outside of the city and using the environment to that advantage. And
are you building? We did talk about this. I remember having an Endless Legend vibe to it. Like, are you attaching, like, expanding the city based off of a central node, and then kind of expanding outward and developing the city over resources?
More or less. You still do the normal things like build mines on, you know, mineable resources, build farms and etc. But, like, you also want to leave some tiles free because you don't want to build districts.
And so you can expand.
Yeah. So these districts are themed around the different, you know, stats in the game. So, like, there's if you want an entertainment district or a theater district, you can have the culture stuff, you know, a campus for the different science buildings, holy site, etc. And it all kind of, you know, geared toward what you want to focus on. Like, if you really want to go for that science victory, you're going to want to try and build as many of those campuses as you can.
Does expanding the city, bring about unhappiness with your citizens if you build the wrong ones?
That's actually the one stat that isn't super well communicated in the game, at least not in this build. You're still going out and trying to get bonus resources, you know, from, you're trading for them and, you know, your
luxury thing.
Yeah, you're cultivating them yourself. But they're like, I just didn't see it, or it's not easily immediately surfaced. But there was never like a "this is how happy your empire is" thing. Like, I never got a message like your empire is terribly unhappy.
Did you ever get like a revolt or anything like that?
No, I never had that.
Huh.
Again, this was on the Prince difficulty, which is one of the easier. What's like the third tier out of like 9 or whatever that they normally have. So the AI and some of the things that happened in it, I have to imagine, are not completely representative of like what more, you know, experienced Civ players will play and get when they get on challenging difficulties. So in playing a full game, you know, the key thing that I came away with was the map really does matter. Where you build your districts, there's a lot of theming bonuses you can kind of build on top of that stuff. Like, you know, you want the most science out of your campus, you need to build.
I want
mountains.
The most science.
That was in Civ 5.
All
so
that
observatories
science.
In your mountains. And
oh,
stuff
okay,
like that.
Sure. The science happens under the mountain.
And certain, you know, wonders require like this district here, and there also has to be a river here, or there needs to be, you know, that kind of stuff. So that stuff does really matter. And you know, if you're the sort of person that wants to build a lot of wonders, you have to be more more thoughtful about where you place that stuff and which city is going to hold it and all that kind of stuff.
How were the interactions with the other leaders? Are they animated, still frames, voice?
They're animated, they're voiced.
How do they look?
They're cartoony. Okay. They've definitely exaggerated the features of the leaders a little bit more this time around, which is, I don't know, it's
fine. I feel like they go back and forth on
this. Yeah, and this one, they're going a little more cartoony.
I think Rev had the most cartoony.
Yeah, I like the overall look of the game. It's definitely not as, like, advanced as you would think a sequel to that game coming 6 years later would look, but it's clean. It has a nice look to it. I like the way the map looks. The only thing that I will express some concern about with this game is that the end game, at least in the way I was playing it, seemed kind of tedious. They had that problem with Civ 5 as well before the expansions came along. And some people still say it had endgame issues regardless. Mm. But I was going for the science victory because that's kind of like the one I feel like I can most comfortably go after no matter what. And the way to get the science victory required me to build these parts. It was like a 5-step process. Not terribly dissimilar from the building a rocket thing in 5, but like this is a little, this took longer. So there was a point where I had researched every technology, I'd gotten every civic in the new civics tree, and I was just getting that future tech thing sure. over and over again for like 90 turns because it just kept,
But you couldn't cinch the deal?
The only thing I could do was just keep adding trading routes to my thing because I had a theming bonus in there for like you would get more production out of international trade routes. So I just kept dumping those into that city to try and speed that up. But it just took a while, and it became clear after a point that my closest opponents were never going to catch me.
Squash them!
Yeah, I was just squashing them. So, you know, the only thing that could have fucked me up was if someone came up with a cultural or a religious victory before I got to the science stuff, but in the end I ended up taking it.
Okay. So yeah, we'll record something on that.
Yeah.
It might be up next week.
Yeah, we'll show in more detail. There's a lot of things I like about it. I have a feeling there's going to be some pacing issues in that game for people, the kind of stuff that, like, future expansions might fix.
All right. Jeff.
Yes.
You play through Virginia.
Yes.
I think we talked. Did we talk about
it? Very briefly up top.
Did we talk about it last week or no?
No.
Okay,
we did a quick look.
There's a quick look up on the site. What are your thoughts on Virginia?
So, I didn't really know what to expect. You tweeted me, you were like, hey, Jeff, you wouldn't shut up about playing through a movie.
Yeah.
Well, Virginia.
And what did you think in response to that?
So, I think, there's a thing the game does. Do we want to mention what it does?
We did the quick look for it. If you're talking about, like, smash cuts and jump cuts.
Yeah, I'm talking about jump cuts specifically and how amazingly powerful I found that device to be in this game, primarily because it is first and foremost a narrative thing.
Yeah.
Kind of just.
Now, before people say it, I have heard, like, 30 Flights of Loving does similar stuff, and I haven't played that. So.
Okay.
But yeah, I agree with you. I mentioned in the quick look as well that the filmic language they use is great throughout.
Yes.
Refreshing.
I think it's very effective. I think it's almost immediately intriguing, which is great. And yeah, I had a couple problems sort of splicing it all together.
The narrative.
The characters confused me a bunch. The game is very lo-fi, so I don't know. I felt a little detached from, you know, the storytelling process that it was going.
Did you find the lack of dialogue, or?
No, I found that to be effective.
Okay.
I thought using that as a tool was effective for me.
So they needed some, like, other narrative hooks of, like, this person always wears a red jacket.
I don't know,
this
they kind of do that. Like, there's characters that are always smoking, I found.
Everybody.
Like, that's a thing. You know, I love how different it is.
Yeah.
I love that. Like, to me, that's the most appealing part of it. I compared it a little bit to, like, a David Lynch sort of story, and I've seen some other people say that as well, where, you know, when you watch a David Lynch movie, you are given a lot of crap. Some of it is almost irrelevant, right? It's really not.
Well, there's a great deal of visual symbolism in everything, and what you're able to, you know, discern from that is,
right,
you know, kind of up to the viewer.
Right. My whole thing is, I'm not sure, given the other aesthetics of this game, that you could play that kind of storytelling out.
Sure.
But again, like,
there is
very surface-level criticism, I think, if you are a fan of different sort of stuff and you know, enjoying a narrative through a first-person kind of thing, this is well worth your time.
It
not to mention it's very short.
To me, I agree. I think towards the end, it kind of goes a little too off the rails with some of the symbolism stuff too, where it's like you need to focus on one or two things here. Yeah. It's like if Blade Runner had the like origami, unicorn, whatever. But then like he kept seeing like a tuna fish sandwich in his drawer.
Right.
But then also like somehow there's a melting snowman that just keeps reappearing. Yeah. And like you gotta give me one of these to focus on. So like it does fall into that part of like too much. Well, slow down. I'm just still trying to figure out who this represents.
There's certain, you know, symbolic totems in this game too, right? That become very important before they have time to become important. You know what I mean?
Yes, but like at the end, it kind of felt like the Wizard of Oz in the tornado, where it's just like shit's flying by so quickly, and you're like, okay, I think I know what that is. I think I get that. Oh shit, I missed that one. What's that person typing? Oh, he represents the media. Okay, got it. Okay.
Right.
Would you say that it's a game that maybe is encouraging the player to go back and play through it again to kind of dissect it that
100%.
Way? 100%.
Okay. Yeah. And when I talked to Austin afterwards, he was like, I'm on my second playthrough. Like, I was like, did it help? He's like, yes.
Okay.
Going back to, like, so that's the thing, right? Like, I imagine when I do play this again for the second time, I don't know how soon I will do it, but I will. And I would imagine that I will appreciate the jump cutting and all that kind of stuff even more, because almost in the beginning, you kind of, for me at least, my brain sort of forgot to put together, like, oh, they're jump cutting this stuff because this is the only shit you need to see.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know that it just didn't register at first. I paid attention to this game. I didn't play it half looking at a laptop.
Why am I sitting in this car?
It wasn't like that. But I think
I
enjoyed it. It was something fresh. I played it while my wife watched. She found it to be very engaging. So
I'm in the middle of playing through Deus Ex, right?
Yeah.
Mankind Divided. And these games probably could not be more dissimilar mechanically.
Mm.
Where in Deus Ex, I'm tearing through people's houses, opening their cabinets, stealing their wine, just basically looting,
right?
In the most like ridiculous ways.
Right.
More or less what I did in Witcher 3 also.
Yeah,
just like every time I would find a house, it's like, cool, taking all the stuff I can.
This feels even more ridiculous because I'm lifting up the refrigerator and throwing it across the room. Like,
right.
Is there an air vent here? No? Okay. I guess there's nothing in this room. I guess I just found this pocket secretary. All right, I'm going to leave your apartment
refrigerators around in all the homes you visit?
Usually try to put them back.
It's very nice of you.
So Virginia is like, no, you can interact with one thing here. And the one thing you can interact with is the thing in this room. Maybe sometimes you can interact with two, but the one important thing.
And I do like, you know, there's a lot of subtle things the game kind of does that I've never seen before, like with how your reticle sort of changes.
Yeah, from a diamond to a circle.
But, like, it also kind of leads you towards the right endpoint, but without being too bashing it, you know, on top of your head.
Totally.
And I think that's effective, especially in the manner and the sort of gate that the story is unraveling.
So there's a real, again, I said this a couple of times, I think the fluency with which they're using that language of film is great, because when you have a jump cut, you immediately are focused when you don't have a jump cut.
And they're good.
And they're good.
They're well placed.
And they time to the music, which is
great, and they have like an orchestra.
Yeah, there's I think it's a Prague Philharmonic.
Yeah, the check.
And so when you have a jump cut, you're telling the audience you don't need to worry about this, right? And then there are scenes where they're making you walk across an entire field, and then it's like, if there's no jump cut there, my immediate response is, this is important, important to the narrative, which I think is great. And again, I just think technically it's one of those things that was very refreshing to me to play and seem, I don't think it's hyperbolic, but it just seemed masterful, like a real confidence in it. But I do think it stumbles narratively towards the end in a way that you maybe didn't tie this up as much as you could have.
There you go.
Fair enough.
Virginia. Kingdom Virginia.
Okay, finally here, Jeff, you are the one in this office that we need to come to talk to about a PSVR unboxing.
Yes.
What's up? What's in the box?
They sent him out.
What's in the box?
What's in the box?
I cannot talk about what it is.
I can't talk about what happens when you plug it in.
But what is in the box?
But I'll tell you what's in the box.
How does it smell?
It smells great.
It does it.
Good night, folks. No, it's great. Here's what you get in the box. You get a headset.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what headset?
You get a processor box.
Okay, a little processor box,
which actually looks like a cute little mini PS4.
Looks like a little PS4.
You got it?
Okay.
You get a power cord.
Yay.
And you get a demo disc.
what's on the demo? Can you talk about what is on
the
demo disc?
There's some stuff on the demo disc.
Jerk.
There's a couple games. We actually haven't.
You, get an old PC Gamer demo disc. Coconut Monkey shows up. And
it's a bunch of trials, a bunch of demos.
It's a copy of Pissed.
Yeah, that's it. And this is the $400 kit. There's going to be a $500 one that gives you the Move controllers.
And the camera?
And the camera.
That's for $500?
And I believe VR Worlds comes with the bundle. I believe, and that's $500.
What a deal.
Well.
Isn't that PlayStation 4 camera like $80?
I believe 60. It's $60 to $80.
And isn't a Move controller like $40?
Yeah, it's a lot.
No, for an extra $100, you're getting two Move controllers
it's
and a camera?
Good deal for that.
Look, they got a warehouse full of these fucking things. They gotta
Here's
get them
the
out
thing,
there.
Though,
tell me the thing.
Because what the unboxing does sort of shed a little bit more light on is the fact that when you go all in, right? So we kind of separate VR into two categories. Mm-hmm. We, as in CNET. You've got the lower end sort of like half VR thing where it's like cardboard,
Gear
VR, Bob VR, whatever it is, right?
Mr. VR,
Mr. Robot. And then when you get to full, more complete motion tracking, body tracking VR.
The more elaborate headsets.
We're going to call that Oculus, we're going to call that Vive, and now PlayStation VR.
Right.
Now, PSVR really is the only thing that you can kind of get up and running going from 0 to 60, right? Starting from nothing and having the whole thing and playing it for less than $1,000.
Right.
Because if you're doing Vive, you're spending $800 on the Vive, and then what? You have to, even if you were building a VR machine, Vinny, if you have one, that's a different story.
The point is, you still bought that
talking
machine.
Talking about going 0 to 60,
yeah, yeah,
right?
No, goofing around.
Yeah, you're just being a total dick.
Kind of, a little bit.
You goof.
How much money, Vinny, if I give you a blank check for Newegg right now, how much do you think you'd spend on a minimally a capable VR machine?
Oh, he just gave me a blank check and now I'm going to buy a garbage machine?
I'm saying do it for the cheapest humanly possible.
$600.
Fine.
Can I do that?
I think $600 is a safe estimate because you're talking about a 970?
Yeah, and then a power supply that can pop out at, 600 watts?
Right, and then I want to put 60. Don't you need 16 gigs of RAM?
So let's see. A power supply, you probably get away with about.
Don't worry about the power supply. Power supply is $80.
Well, so is the RAM. So 16 gigs of RAM is probably about $80.
Sure. Right.
The processor is probably going to run 200, let's say. Right? Like 100 to 200.
I feel like we're already at $800. You can see.
The video card's going to sink in. That's like 250, 300, right?
Minimum.
And then the case is $60.
Screw it. Let's say $600.
Okay. Just for that's what I said, isn't it?
And I think that maybe we're being a little generous.
On the PC. Yeah, and then
so
800
six,
for the...
So that's 14 for Vive,
yeah.
And that's 1,200 for Oculus.
And let's be real, we're probably talking more like actually 15 to 18 for those systems if we're talking about like better operating running systems.
You probably don't want the bare minimum.
No.
Also, your Oculus, you probably want to buy those controllers.
Right. Move controllers, yeah, which aren't out yet.
So here we are with a sub, $900 thing.
And you do put it in the same weight class.
Okay, so I've played this at events, right? Like,
I mean, if we're talking about the quality of experience, like the kind of thing that you're playing in the PlayStation VR versus the kind of thing you would play in Oculus
or a really good rig in Oculus or Vive.
If you're going to do that, then you have to talk about the two controllers and the camera bundle.
Right, but what I'm saying, you're talking about resolution now? Like,
No, I'm talking about PlayStation VR price matching, right?
Right.
Because you're talking about...
So that's why we're adding the $300 you would spend on a PlayStation 4.
Right.
And the $500 you would spend on that bundle.
It's definitely $500?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not. It doesn't
Sorry.
Have that, but yeah, we did look it up yesterday and $500 would...
It looks like they're all sold out.
Yeah,
you can't get
Amazon has sold out its initial allotment of both the bundle and the core headset. So, yeah, if you're looking at it for price, there you have it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we always knew this was going to be your best.
Yeah, and
level.
The install base alone, is... not everyone has a PlayStation 4, but a lot of people who play video games and or would want to invest in this kind of technology do. And so, like you said, the barrier to entry is a lot lower. And
still a lot of money though. Let's.
It is a lot of money. It's not a trivial amount of money, no matter what. It's just the most affordable version of this. The thing I'll say, just based on what I've seen of the launch lineup of PSVR, is that it does seem a little I'm not going to say it's flawless by any stretch, but it does seem like there's more games to attach to that thing around launch than there maybe was for the Oculus launch. And I actually don't remember what the Vive launch looked like, but the Oculus stuff had a lot of tech demo-y kind of things.
I think you have to look at it like this, and this is the point I think you're getting at, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're just basically talking about like pre-existing sort of like familiar landscapes and platforms that have these established reputations where like, yes, Sony kind of has done this game
yes.
thing before. You know, there is a destination for this. There's also what feels like a much more maybe controlled or overseen kind of relationship between the developers and...
In theory. Yes, that is what I'm implying. And
that's what we've been able to suss out at these events and whatnot.
Yeah, and clearly there are going to be some, you know, VR experience things in there as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I look at stuff like, hey, here's Thumper, here's, here's Rez, here's 100-foot robot golf, like, obviously in that game's case, like, it's also just a regular PlayStation game you can buy.
Right.
But, you know, there's some stuff there that I can tie as, like, that's a launch product for this thing, whereas with Oculus, it was like, well, there's Job Simulator.
Right.
And,
this is mortifying.
Boy, there's a lot of, there sure are a lot of, like, target shooting things.
Yes.
I feel like PlayStation VR will dictate how well this does and what comes out for it will dictate whether we see VR next year or it's going to be, like, a long road 6 years out.
Yeah, I think this will be the most popular one. I've said that before.
Yeah.
Again, primarily because of his accessibility.
Yeah. I'm sorry, I don't know.
No.
I don't want to interrupt you.
No, you didn't.
Okay.
I had finished.
I was going to say, it's going to be one of two things. It's either going to be the most popular one, or it's going to be the thing that sends the death knell for the current range
and
of
that's
VR.
It. There's no gray
that's the thing,
area.
I don't think there's room for gray area because I don't get the impression that Sony is in this for the long haul if it's not going to be successful.
I think
the way they're talking about it now is very much like, and we're still doing this. Like, it's not in this really celebratory, we're ready, we're going to get out there, we're going to make a big fucking splash. It's like,
right.
We're going to put this out there and see how it does.
I also think that's because you've got the Pro on the horizon.
Right.
And the Pro, I don't know,
we still don't know exactly what difference that's going to make yet, because we haven't seen that stuff.
Of course. It almost has to for some stuff, right?
Right.
Like, that is, again, something that could be retroactively patched in.
Yeah.
I think, to me right now, that is what I'm most curious about.
The Pro and the VR?
The Pro and the VR. That is, to me, the most compelling, absent sort of thing right now.
When will you be able to have more impressions on VR? On PlayStation VR?
I would think very soon.
In the neighborhood of launch?
Before that.
Okay.
All right. Let's move on. Because, I mean, we're still in the speculation range.
Yes, we are,
here.
Sure.
So let's move on from VR to emails and feedback. We got our first email coming in. If you listening right now, if you want to send an email to us, you can at beastcast@giantbomb.com. That is beastcast@giantbomb.com. This first email we're going to read comes from Jack. Jack says, I'm in my final year at university studying drama. I have found out today that in my digital media theater module, we will be using Second Life heavily. Having classes in a virtual classroom and maybe performing some virtual plays in the virtual globe theater.
Mm.
This is a nightmare. Turns out my lecturer did her PhD on it, hence why she is so insistent we spend all this time there. Do you have any advice on either how to convince her this is a terrible idea or on what I can do to survive forced Second Life?
Jack.
Boy. Okay. I'm gonna pump gas. Y'all wait here.
This whole thing.
Jack.
I would watch your show about how ridiculous of an assignment this is.
I would watch a class earnestly doing performances in Second Life.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's well understood that Second Life is a nightmare of almost limitless shades. But that said, you know, there are people who take it very seriously, who are very ingrained in that community, and... you know, I would use this as an opportunity to try and understand something that looks, you know, from a distance, like something that would be totally repellent to you. Like, just try, use the time to try and understand something foreign and alien to you.
I hope Jack is able to learn something.
Yeah.
Or,
right? what if they get in and it is as nightmarish as Jack thinks?
Well, then you gotta flip the tape.
And you've got a great story.
At that point, I think you gotta leak out, like, the room, the access codes, and let Second Life really pour through the door.
Turn it into content, baby.
That's right.
It's 2016. Everything's content.
When life gives you lemons, stream it.
Make it content.
Yeah.
Stream that lemonade.
All right, Jack. Good luck over there. Let us follow up. I'd love to know. It was beautiful. Yeah. It was beautiful.
He's like, I'm changed. I'm changed.
I cried. I saw a werewolf twerk.
I acted in Second Life. I can act anywhere.
That's right. Oh, man. All right, let's move on here. Alex, why don't you read this email from Tristan?
Okay, Tristan. Sorry, I gotta find that page.
Same page as Second Life.
Same page.
Okay. Sound effects in game, says Tristan. Hey guys, do you ever really wonder how certain sound effects in games and like are made? Not things like the stock punching noises or obviously manufactured sounds, but more along the lines of the seemingly mundane like ambience and footsteps. Good sounding noises provide excellent positive reinforcement. I would assume they are worked on extensively, sometimes improvising or substituting an accurate sound with a more dynamic one, all to get that desired feel-good sensation. With that in mind, how can I be sure that the walking on grass noise I find pleasant isn't actually some sound of some guy masterfully brushing the wool of a Tibetan yak? The amount of work that goes into these small details has made me both paranoid that nothing I hear is real and respectful of any sound effects engineer ever.
I think, hey, if you work as a Foley artist or sound engineer, feel free to send in some of your best. Hey, did you know this sound?
Mm-hmm. Those are always fun.
Is really, that is a craft. I've known a couple of Foley artists over the years, and the stuff that they pull off is amazing. You do not, what I've learned is, you really don't want the real world sound effect. You want it sweetened, and you want when somebody punches somebody, you want a baseball bat hitting a garage door. You don't want the
Actual meat, like hanging meat.
It's whatever sells it, right?
Yeah.
Yes, you don't want actual footsteps. You want, you know, somebody.
Yeah, because guess what? Most of life is just a series of dull thuds. So you want the amplified version.
If you can sell it better, you want the Hollywood version.
Yeah.
So if any sound engineers or Foley artists out there.
You want Wilhelm screams out the wazoo.
You want people punching through a watermelon and be like, ooh, that sound was gross.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested, I would go and look at the, gosh, I can't remember his name, Bert, the guy who did the sound effects for Star Wars. Famous, very famous, Bert.
I don't know, I feel like every part of that movie has been picked over, like, in excruciating detail, so I'm sure you can figure out.
Bert Lightsaber, go look him up,
right.
And, like, you'll get the sound, like, I think the lightsaber sound is, like, an electric razor in a bowl or something like that, and, like, hitting high-tension.
There's a lot of high-tension wire stuff that's used.
It's very, very, very cool. Okay, let's keep moving forward here. Jeff, why don't you read this one coming in anonymously about friends letting friends build PCs.
Dear Beastie Boys, I watched your Kerbal videos. They were very funny.
Thank you.
Made me want the game. It finally comes out on PS4, and it's hot trash. I have decided to take the plunge back into PC gaming. Now here's my problem. I can't and won't learn how to build a PC. I'm dumb. I don't want you to say that about yourself, but I'm too scared to spend $1,200 on components only to ruin them. I mean, what are you, pouring hot coffee on them? I don't understand. You won't ruin them?
You can ruin them.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's possible. A coworker offered to build it after me saying I'm in over my head. I am not social at all, nor do I want to be. My wife and I are a tight-knit group. That's a couple, not a group, but that's all I need. I'm worried about two things if this coworker should build it. What if he fucks it all up and down? Well, he's built his own computer, so it should be okay, right? I don't want to be friends with this guy. He's super great. I just suck at friends. He's refusing money for the build, which worries me he'll want to become Steam friends. And then real human friends after that. Gross. Do I just give him $50 and a thank you and walk away? Help.
I actually really identify with this. I understand what you mean.
That gave me anxiety.
Yeah, I get it. Here's the thing. Person is offering to build your PC for you. If you don't trust him, then don't do it. Like, I understand that, you know, this is probably the closest person you have to someone who, like, would reasonably be able to do this.
Well, that's reason one, and I think this the writer in is saying, okay, I can kind of get over the competency.
This is a Seinfeld premise.
Yeah.
But the second part is, like, that's not the part. The part is, like, hey, let's play a game. Now that you built this sick-ass... I'll just add you on my friend's list while I'm here.
Because I have your computer that I built.
Like, let's let up... Hey, let me just type in. What are you going to be like? No. I actually have no friends on my friends list.
If you're that paranoid about it, and I understand,
yeah,
just hide being online. Right? If it comes to that where you're Steam friends with this person, just hide.
But you're also a coworker,
so you can get rid of them.
Well, here's the deal.
Are you not playing
that
PC we built? What happened?
I use GOG all the time for everything. Here's the thing, right? Don't worry. I don't know if you should worry about trusting this guy. I mean, don't forget, like, put yourself in his shoes.
Yeah.
If he fucks up your computer, he's got to see you every day.
So
that's not going to be fun for that person. So if we're over that, though.
We're over that. Competent.
Yeah.
Here's my 2 cents.
What's that?
Sabotage.
What?
It might cost you a little money, but it'll solve your problem.
What are you suggesting?
Build the PC.
The coworker.
Do the friends list.
Yeah.
You guys are best buds.
You are.
Now you break the PC.
With a hammer.
And you say, hey, I don't want to be sick, but it's not working.
It exploded.
It's something happened and it's not working. He comes over and he looks, oh my gosh, what happened? I don't really know how is RAM supposed to sweat honey? And then they'll fix it and then I do it again. You're the PC guy, but I don't think bees are supposed to come out of my case all the time. And then you guys will never have to worry about the PC again. You have learned how to build a PC.
How have they learned?
Because you took notes. You watched.
You sat there and watched your coworker build it?
Listen, this whole thing, I said it's not going to be cheap. It's going to cost you a sacrificial PC. You're building one secretly while he's building one.
Incidentally, this is pretty much how I learned to build a PC. It was just watching someone else do it.
See? Yeah. So you're going to build a separate PC that's going to be the trap. And then that person's going to be like, what? I cannot be friends with you anymore.
It's too much money.
Because, hey.
It is a lot of money to throw.
Being antisocial is not cheap.
It's also. It's
a lot of money to invest in a social decoy.
And it's borderline psychotic.
No, it's just unnecessary.
Or you could just push harder the other way. Hey, you want to play? You want to play again? You want to play? You want to super play?
This anonymous person doesn't come off like the type of person who would do that.
It's devious.
You're mean.
It's not mean.
Don't cross Vinny, Alex.
It is the easiest thing in the world at this point to find out what kind of PC you should build for the kind of stuff you want to do.
Yeah.
The information's everywhere. You just got to reach out. Just got to grab it.
And
that's all you got to do.
Really, really solid YouTube videos out there. I mean, people who are really super passionate about the PC building community. Like, it's so...
And
it's not amazingly easy, but it is surprising.
And I would hazard to guess that a lot of those people would also self-identify as dumb. And you know what? They figured it out. It's not super complicated when you realize, once you know what the components are and where they're supposed to go.
Right.
That's it.
PC parts picker, is that still around? That's a pretty good place. That'll try and make sure that you don't mess up the parts.
Yes.
Wrong. Say, like, a wrong CPU, say, in the wrong socket.
No one would ever do that.
No one would ever do that. But I'm just saying.
There are, yes, you will be taken care of if you invest a little bit of time and energy doing the research.
You can also make a great friend.
If that's
what you're after.
Yeah.
All right, let's move into corrections. If you've got a correction, a story, follow-up, anecdote, send them in to beastcast@giantbomb.com. That's beastcast@giantbomb.com. This first one is a story. It's a bit of a long one here, so I'm going to read it, and I'm going to jump around a little bit. This comes in from Andrew. It's a bit of a follow-up. I want to share an experience that relates to a question that was asked a few weeks back. Someone wrote in asking how they should spend a, quote, teenage weekend as an adult as their partner was going away.
Teenage weekend!
There you go, that's where it was. And they could spend the entire weekend bathing in their own filth filth and eating nothing but garbage and consuming as much interactive media as physically possible, right? Just total garbage.
You know, things teens do.
We've all been there. Vinny has suggested an alternative, which was to spend that weekend and clean the entire house. And by doing so, you would pay up front for media time down the road. It's not the only reason. And have a better video game lifestyle in the long run.
Yeah, we all just, I was just saying,
we definitely shut this part down.
I was just thinking in my head, like, oh, that's a fucking bad idea.
Everybody said that was a bad idea. The past 4 days, my wife was away for work, Sunday through Wednesday. I have two young children, and I don't have the complete sloth option, but in the past, I've gone as close as possible. Okay, let's skip ahead a little bit here. This time I opted to try it differently. I wanted to play more than the average amount of video games, but also wanted to do something productive and do something nice for my wife. So, I booked one day off and painted our bedroom. Nice. I spent a good portion of Sunday prepping and priming the room, and then most of the day off on Monday painting. That still meant that I could play a huge amount of video games, and during the evenings, I also hired a cleaner for a few hours to give the house a good once-over. Maybe a little cheating, but we'll give it to you. Nobody has to know you hired a cleaner. On Tuesday, while I was at work, when all was said and done, I had accomplished something. The house looked great, and I got about 12 hours of Overwatch in, which, hey, not bad.
Not bad at all.
It was great. I even had a couple of pizzas thrown in as a reward for my hard work. The results. My wife was hugely surprised, very grateful, and super nice. That means when I now... And I can now decide what we do for the evenings and say something like, I could really go for a few rounds of Overwatch or Rocket League. And she has been much more receptive to the idea, even sitting with me to watch a couple. How long will this last? I have no idea. But so far, Vinny's idea has been a success on multiple fronts. I feel great instead of like human garbage. I accomplished something that needed doing, and my wife is happy. I want to say... There you go. I think there are actual studies that say doing something for somebody else makes you feel better. It's science.
I'm still not convinced that letting your relationship atrophy in a sea of sloth and self-interested gluttony isn't the right answer. But you know what? Hey, here's an alternative to my political beliefs.
Here's one counterpoint.
Yeah.
So, think about it. I think the first response is like, this is a great time to be human garbage. But... here's an alternative.
Sure.
Try it. Alex, why don't you read this follow-up about Guar?
Guar. This one comes from Mike. Mike says, hi, duders. In regards to Alex's assessment of the band Guar, I will say it is fairly accurate. As a longtime fan, I will say that I am biased, and I do believe their music is quite good, their most recent albums being more serious and heavier. Although it has been said that the music wouldn't work without the costumes, and I do agree. I don't have anything to correct, however, I would just like to point out a few things that I believe are impressive. Casual listener observer probably wouldn't know. Guar does everything themselves. All the music, props, costumes, spew effects, and stage setup. They have a group of dedicated artists at their workshop, the Slave Pit, where everything is produced. They've produced two feature-length movies, Phallus in Wonderland and Skullhead Face. The former was nominated for a Grammy, and the latter featured Sebastian Bach and Jello Biafra. Despite how goofy they have been over the years, there's a good deal of seriousness buried within. Probably most impressive is that they've been going for 30 years! Lastly, they have a giant coffee table book out there called Let There Be Guar, which has a lot of great history stories and photographs of the band throughout the years. Definitely worth a look. If you ever come across it, thank you for everything. You're the best. Guys, I just want to say I got some angry messages from folks at my comparison to the ICP with Guar.
Wow. Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
I would also like to emphasize, I did say I went to see them four times live, and if I didn't have an appreciation for them, I would not have gone to see them four different times. I appreciate what Guar does.
Thank you, Mike, for writing in about Guar.
Go check out their cameo in Empire Records.
Oh, yeah. Boy, that's a movie I haven't thought about in a while.
Solid flick.
Jeff, why don't you take this last one from Dead Rising Galen.
Oh, we're not going to do tiny house?
We will mention that I got an email in from somebody who's living in an 84-square-foot tiny house in West Texas, which... I mean, you're living in an 84-square-foot...
Pixar didn't happen.
What's that? Yeah. You got to send me a picture.
Yeah, we got
to
see photos of that.
I guess they don't do everything big in Texas.
Boom.
Okay. Hey, East Duders. At the end of the episode during the Dead Rising remaster discussion, Vinny was unable to quite remember the original name of the Vancouver, BC-based developer the Dead Rising series. He was thinking of Blue Castle Games. That's what I was thinking of, too. Yeah. We said, like, Blue Fish Kites or something like that. They were a studio formed by former members of EA's MVP baseball team that left in 2005 when Take-Two closed the exclusive rights to the MLB license. Blue Castle first worked on the big series for 2K Sports. That's interesting to find out.
And before we get a correction for that next week, just want to clarify, 2K secured the multi-platform baseball exclusive rights. That's why MLB The Show still existed.
Okay, gotcha.
Anyway, sorry, go on.
While I'll give Vinny a pass on remembering the name, the statement that the first two Dead Rising games were developed in Japan is incorrect. Did we say that?
Did I say that?
I don't remember that. I didn't think we'd said that, but maybe we did.
Only the first Dead Rising game was developed in Japan. Dead Rising 2, K-Zero, and Dead Rising 2...
Dead Rising 2 K-Zero, which was the prequel thing in Dead Rising 2.
Were developed by Blue Castle. Then Capcom acquired the studio, renamed it to Capcom Vancouver, and they have subsequently released Dead Rising 2, Case West, Dead Rising 2, Off the Record, and Dead Rising 3. Dead Rising 4 is currently in development at the studio and is scheduled for release in December. They were also responsible for developing all the recently remastered versions.
There you go.
So they've basically become the Dead Rising developer.
Yep. Yeah. In Canada.
Yep.
Okay.
Dead Rising.
Beautiful British Columbia.
That's going to do it for our show today. Jeff, we got to get you home to see if you can
I'm so close to being home
today.
Yeah. It sounds like the train actually might be running again. So
really?
That would be the path?
It sounds like it's only to, not from. Might be it's like an exit only thing there.
Okay.
Okay. So people coming into the city from Jersey on the path might be shut down.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
By heading into Jersey.
Here's your live traffic.
Yeah, I guess so. When was this show recorded?
Yeah.
Now you know. That's going to do it for our show. Before we go, there's one last point of contention here from a listener. I'm going to read this. This comes in from Jeff, and hopefully, Jeff, we can
clarify this
here. I'm writing to you today because I've become increasingly concerned over the past few weeks or so about advertisements in the premium podcast feeds. No, not the live reads wherein you guys make it clear that you are reading an ad. I'm talking about advertisers. Well, hopefully there's no ad reading in the premium feed. If there is some,
you know, I think you might be talking about like live podcasts.
Yeah, I might be messing up. I'm talking about advertisers being name dropped within the podcast itself. I'm not even going to read these. An advertiser was named at least once an episode over the past 3 weeks, and now another advertiser in the latest episode, episode 70. You guys seem to design a sketch around each one in order to work their name in a nonchalant way. I assume that due to your agreements with your advertising partners, you will be unable to disclose any information regarding these things, but I would like to make it known that I find this practice to be rather disingenuous, and it makes me consider canceling my premium membership every week. I hope that I'm wrong, and that I won't hear an advertiser's name, but it has popped up with too much consistency for me to believe it's coincidence. I want to say, Jeff, listen to
what?
Me. Jeff, who's writing in.
You are ascribing so much more purpose to the things that we do.
Jeff, we are not that coordinated or consistent.
I was going to take the compliment.
No.
Giving us too much credit.
Here's what happens. At the top of the show, I'm gonna pull the skirt back.
Well, no, it's not the top.
It's before the show. We record the ads,
yeah.
So that hopefully we don't have to break up the flow too much to stop and do an ad read mid-show. Then I'll go in. Like today, I forgot to do the break.
So
the break
that you hear for the ad will in fact be me saying
something like, "Hold on, I'll just do it here." Hey guys, before we get to that, let me try it again. Hey guys, before we get to that, let's take a quick ad break, and I'm gonna throw that in somewhere, probably in the first half hour of the show. I'd like to get to that in a second, but let's take a quick ad break. That probably won't work. That one won't. Or something like, that's funny. Oh, crap. We gotta take an ad break.
That might work.
It depends where I put it. So we'll put something like that in. We'll stick the ads in. And then usually what happens is a bit might come up that we're doing that reminds us of an ad that we did.
Like an hour earlier.
Right. And that's the only reason that.
Yeah. So just to be absolutely clear, there is nothing that is a part of an advertising deal that is requiring us to do that. It's just that we make jokes because we're sitting in a room for 3 hours and it's stuck in our brains.
Or because like before the show, we're like, okay, guys, here are the ads we have to do today. Does anybody have a good thing to do for this advertiser?
Right.
Jeff, nothing nefarious happening.
I understand the sensitivity toward ads. I understand all of that. I get it. You know, that's why part of the reason we have the premium feed is, you know, we get that people don't want to hear that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, just let us riff, man. Like, you know, every once in a while, we're going to have a bit. We're not doing this on purpose. Like,
I think contextually they played. They were kind of fun.
Maybe. And it might be a little too inside sometimes that we had a thing before the show.
So maybe we record them after the show.
No way. I'm too tired.
No, by that point, yeah, my brain is gone.
I can't think
of
it.
Tank's on E, yeah. Then.
What's that?
The tank's on E.
Yeah, pretty much. Speaking of being on E, I think I'm about on E. No, actually, I'm on full because I love doing this podcast.
It's the best time.
Tank never goes down.
Best time to do a podcast.
It's the best time to be playing video games. It is the best time to be...
It is the cold fusion of podcasts.
It just keeps making energy.
Perpetual
you know
motion.
Y'all listening just make me go. That's the cold fusion. That's the hot fusion I'm talking about.
No, hot fusion. Hot fusion is a problem. You want cold fusion. That's the thing. That's the thing we want.
That's the juice I'm running on.
Thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for sending in your stories, comments. Hey, remember if you're a Foley artist, next week is Foley Artist Week. Send in your stories.
Send in
don't
your
buy a racing
tiny Texas house.
Send in pictures of your tiny houses, especially if you're in Texas. Alex Navarro, Jeff Backlar, thank you very much for joining us. Happy birthday to everyone. All birthdays today and this week. Be nice, everybody, to each other. Assume the best, not the worst of each other, and we'll be okay. Give people the benefit of the doubt until they prove you otherwise. And if you're going to leave a comment from today's show, remember... Don't be a jerk.
Exercise some chill.
Channel your chill.
If you're going back and forth with, if you're on your fourth reply here, maybe just say we're going to have to agree to disagree on this one or take it off somewhere else. Jeff Backlar, send us out.
Right? Like, just be nice to each other. Be excellent to one another. Of course. Always give them that kiss on the cheek. See you next time.
I got a little too confident.
Oh, boy. This was a long week. Some games to try to get through this weekend, because next week will be a big week, a long week. Probably as well. person doing? Sitting there in reverse. Lucky they didn't slam into me while I was driving by. All right. Everybody have a good weekend. And, yeah. I'll see you later.